From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in a sprawling office complex in Seattle, the home of Amazon. On Monday mornings, according to the New York Times, fresh recruits are lined up for orientation. They are told bluntly to, quote, forget your poor work habits that you learned at previous jobs. And they're advised that if they work so hard that they hit a wall, there is one solution, quote, climate. There are 14 leadership principles they will have to memorize and they will be quizzed on. And one more thing, any employee can complain anonymously about other employees at Amazon. So work hard, make friends, and prove yourself just in case a colleague decides they want you out. All of this came out in a lengthy New York Times piece on the work culture inside Amazon, and it led to a fascinating split debate across the country. Some readers found the work culture refreshing, challenging, with high standards. Others thought it was designed to burn out young employees so they could be turned over for other young, cheap hires. And there were questions about parenthood. Can women become mothers there? The Times reports that at Amazon, some women felt forced out when they wanted children. What about getting cancer or even taking a vacation? Let's talk about what constitutes healthy work culture and work-life balance this hour. Wow, we have gotten a lot of your comments on Twitter already. We're going to be sorting through those, the questions and comments. And let me welcome my guests, various executives around our Rochester area. They include Lauren Dixon, the CEO of Dixon Schwabel. Nice to see you, Lauren.
Great to see you.
Maureen Wolf is here, the HR and Community Relations Director from ESL. Maureen, nice to have you.
Thank you, Evan.
Kathy Metcalf's here, the Marketing Communications Director at Clark Patterson Lee. Kathy, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And Jim Ramlo's here from Mengel Metzger Bar. He's a partner at Mengel Metzger Bar. Jim, nice to have you.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
All right. Lauren and I were talking before the hour began about that New York Times piece. I read it. It was a long, detailed piece. How did it strike you? Amazon's getting some grief for this. Do they deserve it?
Interesting. It's an interesting question. I do think they deserve it. All four of us lead companies that have far different cultures than that. And it is my personal belief that, you know, if you ask someone to work 75 hours, it's not a badge of honor at Dixon Schwabel to work those kinds of hours. I think we get more out of individuals who work less but work smarter.
Okay. Let's go around the table then. Kathy?
I would agree with what Lauren's saying. We are periods of work. What we do is architecture, engineering. There are times when we do work those long hours. We've got projects to push out, but certainly work-life balance is something that we work at and we continue to be really excited about moving forward.
Maureen Wolf from ESL.
Yes. I do think there has to be some truth to the Amazon story. If that many people have confirmed that it's that difficult a culture, there has to be some truth in it. At ESL, we really think one of our core values is caring about people. And if you really care about people, you don't drive them to work 75, 80 hours a week on an ongoing basis. So we would very much disagree with that.
Okay. And Jim Ramlo from Mengel Metzger Bar, thoughts on the piece to begin with there?
My thoughts are there are a lot of different ways to run a company, that being one of them. I think, though, that it's at the extreme. There's an awful lot of need to make sure that the people, and one of the things that we look at in our organization, is that the people have a good quality of life. And if you're constantly stressing up the bar, then something's going to slip, and it's probably going to be a personal life.
You mentioned as well, when we were just kind of talking before the program, is there a difference, do you think, Jim, between companies that are public that sort of answer to shareholders versus companies that don't? I mean, does that change the way we have to analyze what's going on, for example, at Amazon?
I think so. There's what Jeff has there with his company is shareholders to answer to, a board of directors, and they're people who are never happy. If he hits a 25% return, people wonder why he didn't hit a 30% return. The nice thing about running a closely held business, a private business, which I think all of us are the fact is you can, as top management, you can dictate and work with your folks to decide what is that right life balance. And it might be different mm-hmm. amongst all of us, but you do have the right to make that choice.
But you want your employees to want to work really hard, don't you? I mean, Jeff Bezos has come out and said he disagrees with most of the characterization. I think he understands some of the criticism, but he said, first and foremost, they're not going to apologize for having a culture that says we are going to outwork the competition, period. And that if you're not sort of into that, you don't go work for Amazon, and he's sort of defended that. Is there a defense there, a hard work defense, Lauren Dixon?
I think, in my own personal feeling, is we have very, very high standards at the agency, as do the folks sitting at this table. But it doesn't need to be so forced and so specific and having that badge of honor, you know, working 75 hours to 80 hours. It doesn't work in our environment, for sure.
Okay, but there are interesting questions about, from company to company, there are different standards on being connected, checking email, being connected to your fellow employees, to your bosses, to potentially to customers. And so I think there are different demands based on different, you know, sort of employment profiles. So let's go around the table. Do your employees have to be connected to email at all times, Lori?
We don't mandate that they have to be, but in all candor, our millennials, they're texting me at 11 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock in the morning or on the weekends. That's who they are. But we're pretty
You're not
specific.
Telling them they have to?
No. No, they just do it. They're very, very motivated, hard workers. And we don't mandate any of that. What we do mandate is people start at 8 and the vast majority of our folks are leaving the building at 5 o'clock. Some may trickle out at 5:30. Nobody's staying till 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock.
So if somebody leaves at 5 on the dot, they're not viewed as the person who left early.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because they do connect. They connect via email. They connect via text. It's just who they are.
Maureen Wolf?
Yeah, we managers are connected. And higher-level exempt folks are connected. I don't think anybody feels a super intense pressure to be connected 24/7. And I do think it's a senior manager's job. If you see somebody who seems overly connected and answering things at 2 a.m. to say, that is not what we want here. We want you to have more balance in your life. So I do think management does need to kind of monitor this and get involved if they see somebody who's you know, maybe overly ambitious in some ways, too.
Interesting that Maureen says that. One of the debated parts of the New York Times piece on Amazon, the Times reported that employees are often texted after midnight, and if they don't respond within minutes, they are emailed the next day to ask what they were doing. Why not? Now, Jeff Bezos says he thinks that was not true and overblown, but it's interesting that anyway to hear Maureen say, set that culture from the top down.
Exactly.
Make sure people don't feel that pressure. Kathy Metcalf from Clark Patterson Lee, what do you think?
Yes, we've got standard working hours much the same as I think everyone here. We've got an 8 to 5. I think traditionally you've seen a change in that. Maybe in the past we've had an expectation that people were staying later. It was almost expected part of the position in the job, but not so much anymore. It's more of a, you know, you've got a job to get done. You get it done in whatever hours that is for you. Part of the flexibility that we have is, you know, if needed and you need to leave early in the day, you can take work home, things like that. And that does happen. I think leadership, management, staff does have email connected. We do respond, but I think it's really within reason. I would expect that we would maybe, I like what you said about your managers having training and actually being reminded that they have that responsibility to keep an eye on their staff if they see something like that. I think that's something that we would look at internally as well.
Jim Ramlo from Mengel Metzger Bar.
I think from our standpoint, similar to what Kathy was saying, our workload is client-focused, and so when you make a determination, is there a need for there to be 24/7 texting and emailing, communication, things of that nature? No, not at all. What one we hoped is that someone would rise to the occasion in those instances when they know that there's an important response that's actually required. We have a lot of people that actually work less than a full 40-hour week. That's become a norm in our business. And we also have folks that work from home. Our accounting industry lends itself to that. And as long as you have faith in the people and they're getting the job done, everybody wins in that situation.
We're talking about work-life balance on Connections this hour with Lauren Dixon, the CEO of Dixon Schwabel, Maureen Wolf from ESL, Kathy Metcalf here from Clark Patterson Lee, and Jim Ramlo from Mengel Metzger Bar. The jumping-off point was that New York Times story on Amazon work culture, and we're just talking about what constitutes a healthy work environment, how you create a company of driven people who don't feel driven crazy. First phone call this hour is Helm in Rochester. Go ahead, Helm.
Hello, yeah. It's kind of hard to talk to the panel because it's mostly management, and I say that with respect and admiration for a lot of the managers have hard jobs to do, but it's almost like we're talking in a different world because as an employee or a worker, you see a different perspective. At least I do, and I've been in corporate world my whole life. It seems to be that it's almost rewarded to be ruthless, and it doesn't matter race, gender, or anything. If a person is ruthless and can get, it's almost more pride to be ruthless than to be productive, because if you can cut a person who's been there a while and save the company an extra $2, that's seen as, well, she's making the tough decision, or he's making the tough decision. And if you go against your type, if a woman lays off a woman, or if a man lays off another white guy, or if a black guy lays off another black guy, it's seen as, oh, yeah, that's a team member. And it doesn't really matter what the – and it's kind of reverse of all we were working for. We're at a kind of strange point in our work-life relationship that ruthlessness is the key, and we have to work on it somehow. I don't know how – we're going to address that issue.
All right, well, Helen, let me let the panel respond to that, and I appreciate the phone call. In fact, the New York Times addressed that with Amazon. Amazon has a policy in-house where workers can complain anonymously about other employees, and those complaints get folded into performance reviews, which does not seem fair to me, especially for a company that has thousands of employees who are trying to work their way up. And that's kind of dovetails with what Helm is saying, that, that ruthlessness is rewarded. So, Jim Ramlo, how do you make sure that your employees don't feel like they're going to get cut down by somebody else in the same workspace?
I think an important thing is respect for employees and the fact that that sort of a behavior is not encouraged and is not tolerated. It gets back to the point of the type of business that you have. Are you running a public company? And ideally, it's a situation when somebody goes in for a job interview, if they have the wherewithal and the vision to ask those questions to find out, is this the type of company? And if it's the type of company that they want to work for, that has that ruthlessness to it, et cetera, then that's the right company. But if it's mm-hmm. a company that wants to be working, I go many years back to when I was in school, there was a theory X and Y in management. And one said that you motivate people, that you get them to do the right thing. The other says that those people left to their druthers are just going to actually screw off and you have to be penalized over them. You have to find out what sort of leadership you have in your company and make a decision as far as which way you want to go.
Okay. Well, here's the quote from the New York Times piece. Amazon's internal phone directory instructs colleagues on how to send secret feedback to one another's bosses. Employees say it is frequently used to sabotage others. The tool offers sample texts, including this, quote, I felt concerned about his inflexibility and openly complaining about minor tasks, end quote. Wow. Lauren Dixon, is there anything like that at Dixon Travel? Can you complain anonymously like that?
Not exactly. You know, we have five core values, and they're respect, integrity, teamwork, community, and fun. And we interview candidates with those five things in mind. Incredibly important. And
even fun.
Even fun. Fun is incredibly important, because if you're not fun, guess what? That shows up 3 months later and it just doesn't work. You know, after years and years and years of experience, we certainly are married to that and associated behaviors, to Jim's point. Because what you might think is fun and what I might think is fun may be two different things. So it is incumbent upon our leadership team to be very forthright and really describe what those specific behaviors through examples are. And I think that's the key for us anyway.
What would you do if you got an anonymous note from someone complaining about a fellow colleague?
I probably wouldn't give it much thought, candidly. If they don't have the guts to put their name on the bottom of the page, I wouldn't put much credence in it.
Yeah, you're nodding?
Yeah. We do 360s as one of our tools where people can give feedback to managers. And, you know, we take that process seriously. So we also survey our workforce. through the Great Place to Work Institute is one survey we do, but we also do
what's a 360, by the way?
Where the boss will respond to a series of questions about an individual. The individual responds about how do they feel they're doing on certain areas, mm-hmm. and then their direct reports also and give feedback. And then, again, what does this person do very well, and what's some opportunities for improvement? So we really try to look at those as constructive opportunities to get feedback. And taken in the right spirit, people do benefit from getting feedback on a 360.
But that's different, isn't it, than allowing anonymous complaints?
It is. This is encouraging people to give, again, constructive, I think, is important mm-hmm. part Absolutely. Of it, constructive mm-hmm. feedback. Anonymous notes are very difficult to do anything with. You need to start seeing themes. And teamwork is, again, one of our core values. And I can say ruthlessness is not rewarded. You need to, as a leadership team, reward the behaviors that you want to reinforce in your workforce.
Yeah. That was the biggest surprise of the entire Amazon article to me, was the notion of honoring anonymous employee complaints.
Yeah.
It's very basic. If you have an internet chat forum and it's anonymous, you're going to get more toxic stuff. If people have to put their names on it, you're going to get more honest. That was a big surprise to me. Kathy Metcalf, what do you think about that?
We've been working really hard this past year on what we're calling intentional culture. It started with our leadership group back in December. And interestingly, in one of the presentations and the discussions we were having, we talked about this idea, and we termed it gossip, actually. It's talking about somebody without them being there. It's similar, not quite the same thing. But again, we were recognized that as something that was really not productive for the company. And so that not just leaving it there and recognizing it, we were talking about ways that how can you stop that, if you're in a conversation with somebody and it's tending toward that, someone's commenting and disparaging someone, for example, you could say, well, I understand you might have some differences. Are you willing to share that with this person directly? So there are things that you can do that are productive. I think one of the things just to recognize that we need to pay attention to it is one of the key things.
If you want to call the program and join the conversation about this, about work-life balance, about your own experiences, you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Tim says, I left my job, which was probably my favorite job yet, because I couldn't get the balance right. My new gig is much better. It pained me to leave the old one. Great people, great work, lots of training, cool technology, but I was stressed all the time, and in the end, it wasn't worth it. Chris says, for his current job and position, it is worth not even reading work email on the weekend. I used to read emails on the weekends to see what I would be up against Monday morning. Then I'd spend all weekend thinking about work and the things I'd have waiting for me. I'm more effective when I've actually spent those 2 days relaxing and doing non-work related things and clearing my head. Julia says, I've worked at places where folks didn't take vacation because they didn't want to screw over coworkers, in her words, or return to a pile of work. And so many other comments like that. Can't take vacation, can't afford to do it. Yes, we get vacation time, says Mike. No. I don't usually take all of it in a work year. I see the phone starting to ring. Let's hit vacation time. I want to go around the table. Mengel Metzger Bar, your employees taking vacation?
Our employees are taking vacation. Yes, sir.
I suspect they may be doing some. And I will say, as the host of this program, I work probably too much on vacation, and I'm sure my wife would say that. There are times where I feel like I've got to make sure I'm ahead of the game. I'm guilty of it too. So I'm not sitting here indicting anybody who works on vacation. If you work on vacation, you're like me and you're like a lot of people, but I understand the idea that you shouldn't be penalized if you don't, or if you want to take vacation and not. How is it at Mengel Metzger Bar?
I think there's a general feeling that it's going to happen at times, for sure. So much of it's people specific too. There's the people that you just went through. Some of them are people who could set very definite boundaries in their life, and some of them just weren't able to do that. At our place, I think if we see somebody that doesn't have the capability or the wherewithal to take their vacation or is working when they're at home, we try to give them a set of reminders that there's a whole organization there that can help them. Do they really need to get it to that right now? Couldn't it be taken care of next week? And to try and maybe you want them to come back refreshed, and you don't want them to come back knowing that they've burned through everything.
Yes, so that's the whole point of vacation. The last thing you want is somebody coming back angry that they spent all their vacation time working. Yeah, absolutely. I'd
say it's a mix. I say most of us at Clark Patterson Lee take vacations comfortably, easily, well planned. We do have to plan for them because the project workload. There are some that have found it more difficult, and I was one for a while, and I've been able to whittle that down. I it's not ever been the case that I've been discouraged from doing so. I think in my case it was more of the, you know, I feel like I need to be there for my staff. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, as a manager, though, I am looking at my staff's accumulated hours, and I am encouraging them to take time off.
You have done it. So you've said to people, you don't get a medal for not using this time.
I absolutely have told them and say, yeah. You know, look, we want you. You're stressed for, you know, a certain amount of time. You need to do this. It's great. We're going to make do. Several times I've done that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Maureen?
We encourage the use of it as well, and we have a rule that you can't roll it all over. So we allow up to 2 weeks that somebody can roll over year, but they have to use it. And if they're not, it's the manager's job to get involved and say, you need to plan some vacation time. So again, you use your vacation. For our non-exempt teller staff, as an example, we of course have service expectations that we have to meet. But one of the things that we do that helps is hiring summer students to come in and fill those jobs so people can have availability for vacation during the time of year around here where people want to take it, which is June, July, August. So so those are the things that we do to make sure that we're encouraging the use of vacation.
Mm-hmm. Lauren Dixon of Dixon Schwabel?
We do encourage vacation. We think it's incredibly important, especially to just get unplugged so you can recharge and re-energize your brain. Because obviously in our business, you have to be creative. And if you're tired and stressed, and that just doesn't work in our business. This past summer, someone came to us and said, hey, you know, it was a really rough winter. What if we did 3 Rock Your Weekends? Which means you can take a half a day off on Friday and or Monday between Memorial Day and Labor Day. And the management team thought it was a fabulous idea because, again, it allows them to not tap into vacation time, right? But it also allows them that half day. And I'll tell you, our team members, we're over the moon with that opportunity. So we encourage it.
Friday half days mm-hmm. have to be the most productive 4 to 5 hours anybody's
sure.
If you know you're getting out at lunchtime, you're going to come in with a hop in your step and
yes.
probably very. And I think one of the things that I am learning to do, because I still think we forget that the world existed before email was on our phones, mm-hmm. before 7 or 8 years ago, and I'm still learning how to work on the weekend without working all weekend. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay. I think eventually I'll get to a point where it's okay to work some on the weekend, but to compartmentalize. Not checking email every hour or every half hour or every quarter hour, but instead saying, I'm going to get up in the morning, I'll go for a run, I'm going to come back, I'm going to try to get a solid hour of work done, and then the rest of the day I'm not. You know, as opposed to, hey, did the phone buzz? Should I check it? Is it work? Should I step away from what I'm doing? You know, I have to get better at that too. And so I don't think there's any sort of hard and fast rule, but I think we're all learning how to deal with it. Let's get to the phones, and this is Joe in Canandaigua. First up, go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Evan. Hi, panel. I appreciate the show today. I wanted to take the conversation in a slightly different direction. I'm a driver for a FedEx subcontractor, so I'm the guy that delivers all those Amazon packages. And funny, as I was listening to the show, I just delivered a package to someone. And she says, oh, I love Amazon. And I said, you should tune into Connections. But anyway, the point I was calling to make was I actually just submitted my resignation from the job. I've been working 14, 16-hour days for about a year, really with no days off. I have no vacation time. You know, there's no benefit package to speak of. So it's just been constant work. It's been overwhelming. And I've talked with my boss about it. And unfortunately, the FedEx business model is a little bit different with the subcontracting model. But I'm essentially told this is just kind of how it goes and deal with it.
So. Interesting. So have you talked to fellow employees there before you decided to leave that job, you know, about whether it would get better?
I've had conversations with employees, had conversations with management at the terminal that I'm based out of. And everyone kind of agrees, well, you know, it's really not ideal, and it can be really overwhelming, but this is just the nature of the job, and, you know, if you don't like it, leave. So.
And Joe, let me just ask you a quick question, and I don't mean to ask this to sort of, again, indict your company. I mean, I don't want to be unfair.
But
do you get the sense that because we've gone through these economic ups and downs in this country in the last decade, do you think there are some companies that think, hey, there are people who are just, they should be happy to have a job. Don't complain. You're going to work 14-hour days, and you may get 3 to 5 days off in a year or less, and don't complain, or you don't have to have the job. Do you get the sense that there's a little bit of that mentality?
I think you're exactly right, and my boss seems to have embraced that mentality quite a bit. And I say that slightly reluctantly because my boss and I have known each other for many, many, many years, and I've only worked for him for about the last year. But he's a hardworking guy, and I would never take that away from him. But he seems to embrace the mentality that you have a job to do, and it's the most important thing that you could possibly do. So this is the way it goes, and if you don't like it, then you know, don't have a job or go do something else.
Good luck to you, Joe. What are you going to do?
I have no idea.
Well, but you know, I want to.
I have some things I'm working on, but I have nothing solid. So I'm taking a little bit of a risk, but I think it's going to be a good thing.
Well, and let me also say, part of the conversation on Twitter this morning, preparing for the show, was a conversation among people who said they feel like in this country, we've gotten to the point where too much of our own personal identity is tied to our jobs, mm-hmm. and that we can't afford to lose the job or we lose a little bit of our identity. And Joe, I'm glad to hear you laugh. I'm glad to hear you say that you don't know, but you know, you're going to make a choice that's better for your own health. And so good luck to you. I you know, in many ways, I wish a lot of people had your attitude about it. So
thanks. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the call. That's Joe in Canandaigua. Interesting phone call. And again, I don't want to talk too much about his own company. I don't know. I don't have the management here. But I do suspect, I've heard managers in different places say, if you're not happy having a job, just leave, because there's a lot of people who would take it if you didn't. And I don't think that that's leadership.
No.
I don't think that that is the way you inspire people to do well. Bud in Chile, next up. Go ahead, Bud.
Hello. Well, I love the topic, but I hate the concentration you're talking about. I'd like to bring up the issue of part-time. There are many companies around locally who are forcing people to go part-time so they won't have to pay them health coverage or other benefits. They hire too many people so that they got plenty of coverage, but they do not pay for health care. And the other guy was talking because he had to work too many hours to get paid. I'm talking about the people who desperately want to work full-time, and the majority of companies now who are forcing people to work part-time, and they say the same thing. If you don't like it, we'll find somebody else. But that is really bad news, and I'm not going to use a name, but the letter W comes to mind. Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call, Bud. I don't know how many part-time employees are companies around this table. ESL,
Marie, yep. Yes. We have about, I'd say, 30% of our workforce is part-time. But we are different in that we train them quite extensively, so we want them to stay at ESL.
Eventually move full-time?
Yes. Yeah, we post all our positions from within, but many, many start at a part-time basis. But we also give people the same health benefits as long as they work 28 hours or more. So that is a huge competitive advantage for us.
Hold on, say that again. So if you work a full-time or if you're part-time, you can be part-time at 28 hours.
Yes.
But you're still getting health benefits,
yes,
at ESL.
Yes, the same cost share as a full-time employee. So that we see that as a big competitive advantage for ESL.
Well, I would think so. I mean, what's the feedback you've gotten from your employees on that?
They love it. Again, we have about 70 plus percent women at ESL, and some may be working on the teller line, and they work, frankly, for the benefits. So they may have a husband, as an example, who works independent contractor, et cetera, and benefits are very, very important. And we know that, and we value that at ESL. So we ensure that we offer very competitive benefits.
Interesting. It's got a note from Joel about adjuncts. You know, this is a we've definitely seen universities, not all, but many, move towards employing fewer full-time professors, more adjuncts. So, but I appreciate the sentiment in that phone call, and very interesting to hear about what ESL is doing, Maureen.
Evan, I think it's interesting is, again, the Bud was talking about the fact that people deliberately try to keep those employees underneath the threshold so they don't have to pay the benefits. It's an awful lot of the public companies that are actually doing it. It's driven by just pure cost containment. Yep. I think, again, if you looked around the table here, the folks here could have a law like that if they really wanted to, but they've consciously not made that particular decision. And it's unfortunate that when the right answer is just keep saving costs, sometimes that's what's going to happen.
Peter in Penn Yan and Rich in Rochester, we're coming to you after this short break, and we're also going to get more comments and some really interesting questions for us to think about from Twitter. We are on fire with listener feedback this hour as we talk about work-life balance and work culture with our panel, Lauren Dixon, the CEO of Dixon Schwabel, Maureen Wolf, the HR Director and Community Relations Director from ESL, Kathy Metcalf, the Marketing Communications Director at Clark Patterson Lee, and Jim Ramlow, a partner with Mengel Metzger Bar. So let's get back to the phones after this very short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On the next Connections, it's Innovation Friday. My colleague Scott Feibusch is in studio, hosting the program with our team from the Innovation Trail, reporting on the economy and more in upstate New York. They'll be focusing on a number of issues, including accessibility at the ballot box. Are we doing enough to make sure everyone has a chance to vote? That and more on Innovation Friday.
The author Paul Kingsnorth never thought his book, The Wake, would get much attention. After all, it's written in a mostly made-up language. Then the first review came out,
which said it was a literary triumph, which I thought, blimey, no one's ever said that about my writing before.
We visit the author in Ireland later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you want to read the New York Times story on Amazon's work culture, I posted a link to it on my Twitter page, at Evan Dawson. You can go find it there, or just Google New York Times, Amazon. It sparked a lot of interesting conversation. That's what we're talking about with our panel this hour. And boy, I can tell you, as someone who is married to somebody who is self-employed, owns her own business, there is a separate category out there of people who work for themselves, especially small business owners. I can't tell you how many times when my wife started her own business and people say, oh, you know, you can take off whenever you want. Well, if you own your own company, every day is a work day, you know, and every holiday is a work day, every weekend day is a work day. And I think our Peter and Penn Yan might be able to weigh in a little bit more on that. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a two-point question.
Yep.
I am self-employed. I'm a farmer, so every day is a work day. I try to make this business family-friendly, employee-friendly, so I give a fair amount of vacation time. It seems that when employees take that vacation, that 60-hour work week for me just doubled because the work still has to get done. So how to balance that? And I guess the other part of the question is how do I take a vacation when the final decision is often mine? And even if I'm on vacation, sometimes things end up coming to me that I have to work on.
Yeah, Peter, I mean, I think I would just say, Peter, before you hang up, I think you are speaking for a lot of small business owners that you have this dilemma. You know, do you take time off? Can you afford to? And I admire you. And the people, like I said, people like my wife, many small business owners, that's not easy, is it? I mean, I know that. How much vacation are you taking a year, Peter?
Usually try to take a couple of long weekends when I can, then I often find that the vacation that I do get is work-related in some way.
Yep.
So maybe a week or two in a year, but with some kind of work aspect related.
Well, a salute to you and all the farmers out there, by the way, Peter, especially small farmers. Thanks for what you do. We appreciate it, and thanks for the phone call. It's a great thing to think about. But he's asking the panel an interesting question. You know, when your employees, especially the smaller you are, and we've got, you know, people representing companies of various sizes here, but... Yeah, I mean, Lauren, how big was your company when you and Mike started?
It was Mike and me.
Okay, right. So I mean, you grew sort of incrementally, didn't you?
We did. We did.
You know, yes. So in the earlier days, because now how many employees at Dixon Schwabel?
A little over 100.
Okay, so I'm not saying that's a huge company, but let's say you had 6 or 10. Did you feel strain when people would take time off? You know, what do you do about that?
You know, it's interesting. Back then, we only had a very few accounts, so we planned accordingly mm-hmm. and got work done so we could get ahead of the game. So when we did go away, we felt that it was A-okay. You know, we didn't feel badly about it. Today, it's very, very different, and I feel his pain because you want to do the right thing. You want to continue to give great service, but how do you do that? And that's, I wish I had the answer to it, but it is a tough thing, and when both Mike and I go on vacation, he has the ability never to look at his phone. I don't know how he does that, but
don't you
I
admire
wish I was
him?
More like
do, wait,
him.
Well, let me actually. Do you admire him, or are you furious about that?
No, I admire that, but I'm anxious, and so the first thing I do when I get up in the morning on vacation is I grab my phone and I see what has transpired, and I try not to look at it throughout the day, but I definitely right before dinner have to spend a little quality time with my phone.
Yeah, I hear that. Anybody else want to weigh? I mean, I think. Partially, I think it's a function of farming, and that is such it's an important line of lifestyle and work, but it is tough.
It is.
You know, we've talked to a number of small local farmers on this program, and you know, a lot of love for them because that's really tough. Any other thoughts from the panel? I mean, I don't know what you say about that, other than you know, Jim, if you've got a few employees and they want to take time off, I guess you have to come up with a system that covers the work.
You do. But the only thing that I can think of, and we always say in our business that the two hardest working groups of people are the farmers and the restaurant owners because you can never be away. You always have to be there. But the only thing I can think of is seasonality. Are there times in our business, we don't encourage people to take time off. We don't stop them, but we don't encourage them to take time off in the winter. Because that's our busy time. I wonder if there's are there certain times in the farming industry where it might be just a little easier to get away, the winter, for example.
Yeah, the wine industry you'll find a little bit more in the winter or even sometimes, you know, early summer before harvest, before things get going. And hopefully you can, Peter, but thanks for the phone call and for reminding us of that. Rich in Rochester, next up on Connections. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I had several quick points. In vacation, I don't know if people look at this nefarious or whatever. I think it's also important for people to take vacations. On the negative side is if they are doing things they shouldn't be doing, they will show up when they're on vacation. But also it's a way of evaluating that job within your company because now you have other people doing that job while they're going for that week. And then you have new eyes on it, not to get rid of them or something, but maybe improve it. We see that you're doing this, and maybe we need to get rid of this. Maybe we need to move that. That's number one. And number two, how do you stop the passive-aggressive behavior of people within your company? Because I think that I find that to be a poison pill that's always there. And, okay, last thing is public companies. I'm beginning to wonder how good the public model of companies is good for us overall because, number one, they're always cutting, and the people who leave first are the ones who are the best that can afford to leave. And also you end up with these Amazon systems situations where, for some reason, a public company's got to be a constantly growing entity. And you can't do any strategic planning past 2 weeks because in 2 weeks here comes the numbers, and our numbers have to look right.
Well, all right,
those are three things I've touched on.
But, Rich, let me bounce back to the second one. I don't exactly know what you – I understand the notion of passive-aggressive behavior, but in what context in a work setting? Passive-aggressive to do what? What do you mean by that?
Well, in the sense of backbiting, maybe. I'm lucky in the job that I work on. The team that we have is good. But I talk to others, and I watch others, and I watch the things that go on. that are almost, they're poison within the department or companies that I know of because of the actions of people who aren't maybe upfront, aren't forthright. That, you know, there's a difference between lying and being forthright, or telling the truth and being forthright. And so, you know, if you see something, say something, be honest, be constructive instead of in the background almost torpedoing others.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I mean by that.
Rich,
how do you deal with that type of issue?
Thanks for the phone call. Let's go around the table. You've got backbiting or sort of passive aggressive. You notice it in your workplace. I mean, if you notice it, Lauren Dixon, what do you do about it? I know a lot of the people work for you. I would sort of be surprised if that's happening. But if it does, what do you do?
Well, right now, we don't have any of those kind of behaviors being displayed. But I will tell you, throughout the years that we've had the business, it's going on 29 years now. It's hard to believe that there have been individuals who have displayed this kind of behavior, and we nip it in the bud. And we say, you know what? It's not how we behave. This job may not be for you. If that's something that you're going to continue, then I need to help you find another job. Because it's that important to us. Toxicity is a terrible thing in the workplace, and it affects productivity and thus your profitability. So anything you can do to eradicate that. But I think it's a conversation one-on-one with the leader of that department and nip it in the bud immediately.
Maureen,
yeah.
From the SL?
I think you have to go back to what are your core values, and that kind of behavior doesn't align with core values at ESL. So that's how we would frame the discussion. And again, we want people who want to work at ESL. We don't want people who are toxic to the culture. So it is the manager's job to address the situations, again, nip it in the bud early. We hope to do that in a positive way so that the behavior can be corrected. But if it can't, it can't. And you need to look out for the good of the whole rather than the one person.
Kathy Metcalf at Clark Patterson Lee.
Again, similarly, it needs to be a one-on-one discussion, but even before that, it's that concept I brought up earlier about having this intentional culture where you'd minimize the risk of something like that happening in the first place. It's developing all those workplace habits and trust among yourself that I think will make that happen less and less.
You'd like to make good hires coming in the door.
Right. Absolutely.
I imagine that's
absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Jim Ramlo, Mengel Metzgerbar?
I think if I understood what Rick was saying, and Rich, a lot of that sort of behavior is what we refer to as triangulation. It's not people talking directly to each other. It's people talking about somebody else. And so the tone at the top that our managing partner, Mark Kowaleski, sets is that that sort of behavior is really not tolerated. If you have an issue with somebody, go to them and deal with them directly. Don't have it be a passive-aggressive behavior or behavior where you're going behind their back, because that just destroys morale.
Bob writes to us and says, I work for a Fortune 15 company, and I'm always dealing with what you might call a corporate race to the bottom. Business function and entire departments based in the U.S. that support my team are constantly disappearing as these corporations search for cheaper resources in other countries. It always seems that the bottom line is all that matters. As for vacation, I tend to give 6 weeks back each year. It's a nice gift to the company. And I can say that being an older salaried employee these days at a U.S. corporation is not the hot setup. That's from Bob. He says, P.S., yes, there is a lot of just be happy to have a job in my company. And before I get back to the phones, Caleb asked a couple of interesting questions. Here are the questions Caleb is asking on Twitter. Would Amazon be as successful if they didn't have this culture? And if you're just joining us, the New York Times wrote a piece that has been discussed greatly in the last couple of weeks about Amazon work culture, an extensive piece interviewing 100 current and former employees, some people thinking that it's over-the-top, difficult, toxic in some ways, others thinking that it is super competitive with high standards. And Caleb is saying, like it or not, would Amazon be Amazon without it? What do we think here? Anybody want to tackle that as a yes or
no? I guess
no?
What your definition of successful is, you know, if we went around this table, I think all of us would not immediately go to make as much money as you can being, you know, the definition of success. But instead, you know, my definition of success is to absolutely love what you do every single day, and then it doesn't become work. the more productive a company is, the more profitable it is. So I look at it a little bit differently. I don't put finances first. I put happiness and productivity, and then the profitability follows. And so, you know, it depends on how...
what your metrics are.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So maybe the point there, Caleb, is that maybe Amazon with a different culture wouldn't be the same size, but maybe you wouldn't have stories written about every employee crying at their desk. Who knows? That's a good question. He also follows up and to ask, would Kodak have survived in the same way that it was if it had that culture? And boy, that's a hard one. I don't know the answer to that. Any thoughts from the panel on that? Everybody's looking at me saying, don't ask me about Kodak. It's a good question. I don't know, Caleb, because I actually don't know what day-to-day life was like inside Kodak. But, you know, those are fair questions. So Bob in Pittsford is next. And Bob says both he and his wife work a lot. I'm curious to know about the story about the park. What's going on, Bob?
Hi, good afternoon. We actually do travel quite a bit, partly because of her job. And getting away from the phone is almost impossible in those situations. So what we found works well is we recently did a family trip to Algonquin Provincial Park in Canada, and there is no cell service available. So you didn't have an option. You couldn't check your phone.
Here.
We all survived. We all kept our jobs, and everything is fine.
Does that surprise you?
In today's world, you often hear, well, it's because I have my phone and can check email that I can go on vacation. So it's a constant contact with work, and people are fearful of missing a phone call or missing a text or missing an important email. But I do, you know, referring to your earlier program, I do believe it is an essential thing from the leadership down. And if they create an environment that makes it okay to leave your phone when you go on a vacation, then that's okay. But I think a lot of the expectations too high, and people just feel panicked being away from it.
I think that is a great point, Bob. And Maureen Wolf from ESL was, you know, making much the same point earlier. If you missed what Bob is referring to, yeah, I think if it comes from the top down, there is a lot of lead and I'll follow, and that will be interesting to see going forward. Just how many companies sort of change that or sort of remodel their expectations for how many of us are on our cell phones or checking work email all weekend or all vacation long. I've got a couple of emails asking about what one listener refers to as the elephant in the room, paid parental leave. When are we going to get with it? Number of comments like that. And, you know, I certainly understand that question. According to the New York Times, a lot of women at Amazon felt like they could not have kids, or it was wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you're pregnant, get ready to leave the company. And that was... You know, I Jeff Bezos says no way to that, and I understand that. But there's some women feel pressure. We know that, and that can be harshly unfair. So let's go around the table. How do you handle it when people become parents in the company, and can it be difficult for them? Do they feel any pressure, Lauren Dixon?
I don't think so at Dixon Schwab. We at all times have at least 4 to 5 women pregnant, and we have baby pools. I mean, we make it a really fun thing, and. It is important that people leave at 5 o'clock to be with their families. And we have our eye on that ball every step of the way. But I think we're very family-friendly focused at Dixon Schwab. And I don't believe our folks at all have ever feared for their job at all.
How much time do they typically take off?
3 months.
3 months.
Yes.
Okay. Maureen Wolf, ESL?
Yeah, average of 12 weeks, certainly, to take off for leave. And again, we're 70% plus women, so we have a lot of babies.
Yeah.
and most people come back, and we, at times, will adjust their schedule. Maybe they want to tone back to 32 hours, 28 hours, et cetera, and we do that because, again, retention is so important. We invest a lot in these employees, so we want to keep them and benefit mm-hmm. from their knowledge.
Kathy Metcalf from Clark Patterson Lee.
Again, I think that our leave would be comparable to what Lauren and Maureen said, and we do offer the ability to make a flexible schedule when people return, and again, I'm a case in point. I benefited from that directly, cutting back hours when my children children were young. I see it today where we're working. Some are working 4 days a week and continue to do so. So it's an important part of that flexible scheduling is an important part of making a family-friendly place to work.
And Jim Ramlow from Engel Metzger Bar.
I would say I would echo the views around the table here. The 12 weeks is generally the norm. Oftentimes, it's at that pivotal point that you see somebody say, I want to work a flexible schedule, I want to work less than 40, I want to work from home. As can be seen around the table here, it's supported by the top management, and that makes it so much easier in a company if the message at the top is we're going to allow that sort of behavior.
Do you feel for the women, and frankly, let's say it as well, the men too, the dads, do you feel for the parents across this country who feel like they're going to lose their jobs?
Oh, I mean, certainly.
It is a very strange place we're at in this country where a lot of parents feel that pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, this Amazon story, that's not the first place we've heard that, right?
It's so foreign to all of us sitting around the table, but it's just, when you think about it, so, so very sad. I can't even imagine my children, as they're now new parents, ever wondering and feeling that kind of angst. It's a shame. It really is.
We got about a minute left, Lauren, so I'll give you the final word here. We've been talking about what makes for work-life balance. It's different for every person, and people sort of define their own happiness in different ways. But what's the takeaway, not just from the New York Times Amazon story, but to the modern conversation about a work-life balance that you would want your own employees to feel? What would make you happy if privately we talked and they said this about their company?
Probably that we had a very family-focused, fun environment at Dixon Schwabel, and that there was no stress and there was no pressure. Now, in advertising, sometimes there is a little bit of stress tossed in, but overall that the leadership team in particular is really focused on our people, period.
I hope these 2 hours, a lot of not just employees, but managers have been listening. There's a lot of good conversation about what makes for good work-life balance. And thanks for all of the phone calls, the tweets, the emails, all of the interaction these 2 hours. A lot of people very engaged about what balance really means and how to achieve it. Sounds like, unfortunately, in some places, people are struggling with that, but we're glad to be a source of conversation for you. And thanks to our panel. Jim Ramlow from Mengel Metzger Bar, a partner. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Kathy Metcalf from Clark Patterson Lee. Thank you, Kathy.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Maureen Wolf from ESL. Thank you, Maureen.
It was a pleasure.
And from Dixon Schwabel, Lauren Dixon. Nice to see you, Lauren.
Great to see you as well. Thanks, Evan.
Val LaBanca is the engineer of this program. Thank you, Val. Barsook Records provides the music. It's a local band. You should check out Ra Ra Riot online and purchase their music and give them a little thumbs up of support. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for listening to Connections on member-supported public radio.